please put your hands together for my friend, Scott Guthrie.
Thanks so much for everyone for coming out here and showing up tonight. I know it's the night before the official launch, but it's a real honor to be here again and have the opportunity to kind of kick things off for another Dev Intersections. So we can go to machine two. You can see my slides, great. So what I thought I'd do this evening is talk a little bit about the journey of the cloud and specifically kind of walk through some of the work that we're doing at Microsoft to both make it easy to move to the cloud, but more importantly, really enable you to be incredibly successful with it. So we're gonna show off lots and lots of demos, hopefully make it fairly interactive, and hopefully it will not install an update on me while we're doing it. I didn't see what that error message said, but I'm a little more nervous now. Let's just get going, and then that way we'll see how it goes. So I think one of the things that I think is pretty exciting right now is just the time it is to be a developer. You know, the amount of cool technology that's out there that we can now take advantage of and build amazing things is pretty amazing. And with this great capability also comes challenges. You know, the challenges being like, how in the world do you keep up with all of this stuff? And that's partly why shows like this are so valuable, is kind of get the opportunity to learn individual skills and learn new capabilities. And that's also what we're trying to do with Microsoft, is make it possible to kind of take all of this great capability and enable you to use it to be really successful with it. And the types of things that I often hear as I talk to developers is, again, all this stuff's great, but at the same time, I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed in terms of keeping up with it. Now that I'm starting to use the cloud, my organization's expectations on me are going way up. And sometimes it's not just to build a new system, it's often to kind of connect our company with new customers and new opportunities. And so there's a whole pressure, not just on the technology side, but often on the business. And then obviously, as you kind of think about building these systems, security is paramount and top of mind. And how do you keep your system secure? And how do you make sure that as you use all this technology, you end up being successful as you build it? And all these things are the types of things that, as my team comes to work every morning and thinks about Azure and thinks about the cloud, that's first and foremost what we think about, which is ultimately, how can we help make you more successful? And in particular, enable you to use really innovative, cutting-edge technology in an approachable way? How do we enable you to do it in a trustworthy way, where you can be secure, where you can be compliant, and where you can effectively use this technology within your business at large? And at the end of the day, how can we enable you to deliver results faster than ever before? And hopefully, as a developer, do so in a way that is fun and ultimately makes your job even more rewarding as you do it. And what I thought I'd do is, rather than just sort of blather on about how we're trying to make you successful, is actually dive in and let's kick off some demos. And as I mentioned, we're going to be pretty demo heavy throughout this session here tonight. And what I thought I'd do is just to actually start things off by introducing Azure for people that don't know it, and then also highlight a bunch of really cool new features that we've just shipped over the last month that you can also now take advantage of as well, that I think speaks to this innovation, trust, and results-based model. How many people here are using Azure today, or have used Azure? Okay, about a third of the hands, great. For people that haven't used Azure, this is our Azure Management Console. And it's basically our portal, if you will, that you can basically open up in any browser and use to manage all of the different resources that you host and run within Azure. And so you can create new resources. You just basically click this little new button here, and we give you kind of a list of all types of resources you can create. So you can create VMs, you can create databases, you can create container services, and we'll be creating a lot of those things throughout the session. And then effectively, I can go ahead and find all of the different types of resources that I want. And so in this case here, I've got literally, I think, thousands of VMs inside this subscription, inside this list here, that I can go ahead and open up and manage. And if I want to, I can go ahead and pin any individual VM or resource directly onto my dashboard here, so I can kind of immediately jump into it and manage it. And so in this case here, I've got a VM. This is using our new M series of VMs on Azure, so it's a 3.5 terabytes of RAM and 120 compute cores of processing power. And the cool thing is, I can spin one of these things up in about 2.5 minutes anywhere around the world. and start taking advantage and using it. I could also pin, for example, VM scale sets, which now enable you to manage not just an individual VM, but literally hundreds, or in this case here, 1,000 individual VM instances that I've deployed as an overall group that I can go ahead and consistently manage and set policies around. Again, this works not just for infrastructure, but it works for databases, it works for web apps, it works for container services, IoT, and a whole bunch more. And so the other thing that we now do is, in addition to providing this experience inside a web browser, one of the cool new features that we just shipped, and if we go ahead and switch over to machine 5 here, I'll show it off. I got an iPhone. This works with other phone types as well. And basically, I've just tethered it so you can see what's on my screen. So I got my Disney World Pass thing here. But I also have this new Azure experience that's loaded, and this basically lets me see all those same resources now that are in that web browser portal. But I can go ahead and click, and so this is my website, and I can actually pull up all the details now in a native mobile app experience on the go. And if I wanted to, for example, see how is my web app working, looks like I had an error a little while ago, I could go ahead and debug. I can now do it entirely from my phone. I can even do common things like restart or redeploy any of my resources now, literally using the phone inside my pocket. So we switch back now to machine number 2. One of the other things that we focused on in terms of Azure is providing this sort of experience where you can use a GUI-based experience, whether on a native app, whether in the portal, in the browser, or inside, say, a development tool like Visual Studio. The other thing that we've really focused a lot on is how do we enable you to use a command line experience and take advantage of automation scripts as well as you move it. So how many people here use PowerShell today for automation scripts? How many people here use Bash? Great, number of people use Bash. How many people here don't have any automation scripts? How many people would like to write more automation scripts in the future or know that they should probably? Yeah. So the good news is we make it all those things easy with Azure. So you can use PowerShell, you can use Bash. You can do it directly from a PowerShell environment. So you can just launch a PowerShell window and go. You can launch a Bash shell, say, inside a Mac and go. The other cool thing we just added that's new into Azure is this little icon that looks like a command shell in the top right of our portal. And if you click that, one cool thing that we now do is you'll see directly in the browser inside the management console, we're actually now loading up a command shell for you. In this case here, it's Bash. We'll be opening up offering PowerShell in this hosted option as well shortly. And what this is actually doing here, which is kind of cool, is it's actually hosting for me a VM back on Azure, which gives me a full interactive Bash shell or PowerShell that I can now use to basically manage everything. And it is a real system, so if I wanted to, I could go ahead and type AZ, which is our CLI experience for Azure. And so this basically gives me a way that I can go ahead and manage each of my resources from the command line. And so if I wanted to, for example, see all the VMs running inside my account in Azure, I could say Azure VM list. This is by default outputting a whole bunch, oops, JSON. If I wanted to instead pipe this into more of a table format, I could do that too. So there's three VMs now running inside here, and because it's a full command line experience, if I want to pipe this output, for example, and grep on it, I could go ahead, let's go ahead and look for all the SQL resources. I could go ahead and filter and use all the native command line experience that I'd like to use as well. So this kind of gives you, again, a super easy way you can use and manage Azure resources however you want, again, from the command line, from a mobile app, from a browser. And if you create anything, so let's go ahead and say create a new VM. So this is what it would look like to create a new VM. I'm going to call it ScottGU Demo 2. In this case here, it's an Ubuntu located in the central US. I go ahead and hit go. This will take a few seconds, and what I should see is it's now completed. Azure's now spinning up one of those VMs for me in the central part of the US. And the nice thing is, all this stuff is connected, so if I go ahead and look for ScottGU Demo 2, what I should see is, that resource being created and spun up right now. And as soon as it's basically fully loaded, I'll be able to log in and be able to use it as any type of resource. So kind of, again, consistent experience that we're trying to connect across the overall environment, allowing you to manage anything inside Azure exactly how you want to manage it in a super easy, friendly to use way. Anyone here ever have any problems with their apps in production? Nah, me neither. But we all have friends that have. And so, you know, one of the things that we try to do as part of this overall Azure experience is, you know, again, how do we kind of provide built-in services and support so that, you know, you can actually, again, be more successful, not just in creating things, but actually in monitoring them in terms of figuring out when things go wrong, and again, in terms of how do you keep them secure. And so what you're seeing here is my kind of customized dashboard. Again, I can lay this out however I want to, so you can see, for example, I've got, you know, CPU of one of my systems there. I can drag it around, I can delete things, I can tailor, like, what are the most critical metrics that I want to monitor around my system. And one of the things that we have built in is also this thing we call an application map, which shows me not just the individual resources, but specifically shows me how they talk to each other. And so you can see here I've got a server-side app that's calling out to an HTTP resource somewhere on the web. It's also talking to a SQL database, and then it's also talking to another microservice. And you can see here, I have a few places where it looks like I'm throwing errors. You know, not every time, but a couple of the times. And, you know, this provides an easy way I can track the latency as well as the error count. And if I want to, I can then go ahead and just click on any of these resources and effectively say, show me the slow requests. In this case here, let's show me the failed requests that have been happening. And built in Azure is built-in monitoring tools that will actually show me how the health of all these systems are. I can see that most of the errors are happening on this one particular URL. I can drill in to see what the health of that URL is, and then I can go ahead and see what are the failed requests that have happened to that URL over the last time period. Drill in, and this is now pulling out all the exception details and history for that particular request. And what it should show me in just a few seconds here is everything that happened, including that stack trace from that particular error message, and exactly, you know, what happened. I can even see whether the user clicked on it. Here's their IP address. Looks like they were coming from Illinois on a PC. And if I drill into that stack trace, I can then understand exactly where in my code that particular error occurred, and obviously go ahead and fix it. And we've even integrated things like work item tracking. So if you're using things like Visual Studio Team Services as part of your team environment, we can automatically open up a bug directly inside Azure and log all this detail for someone on the team to go ahead and take care of. So that's a little bit about monitoring, sort of a little bit about management. Last thing I'm just going to talk about in terms of being successful is that trust element I talked about, which is how do you build secure systems, and how do you make sure as you're using the cloud and as you're deploying all these resources that you're following the right best practices and find out if you're ever doing something wrong. And again, one of the things that we've built into the overall experience is something we call a security center. And this isn't just sort of a PDF that you're supposed to read of best practices. If you launch it, one of the things that's nice about it is it's actually scanning all the resources that you deploy inside Azure, and it's actually telling you and looking proactively of where you're not following what we consider security best practices. And this is sort of a built-in feature of Azure that we provide for free that you can go ahead and leverage. And so in this case here, I'm going to look at all the VMs that I'm running inside my subscription, and this is going to basically tell me, where am I not following kind of what we'd recommend as best practices? So specifically, where do I not have endpoint protection installed? You can see I have 101 of 233 VMs where I've forgotten to turn that on. Where have I patched the system, but I forgot to update it, which is a common problem, or a script got stuck. And you can see here I've got 13 VMs that I think are patched, but because they weren't rebooted, it doesn't actually have the patch applied. Likewise, where am I not doing encryption at rest, and I should go ahead and turn that on. Oops. And so forth and so on. And so these are kind of types of things that we provide built in that you can kind of constantly look at across your dev team, whether it's monitoring, whether it's security, as well as the overall management of the system, and the type of experience end to end that we're trying to provide to make you even more successful. So all these features that we deliver with Azure, we deliver around the world. And so we have a notion in Azure, for people that are new, of what we call an Azure region, which is basically a cluster of typically multiple data centers where you can deploy and run your code. And so this map here, these little dots, indicate where we have data center regions around the world. We just added our last two in South Africa last week. We're the first cloud provider operating in Africa. And you can kind of see across the US, we have lots and lots, across Europe, across Asia, Australia, South America, you name it, where you can go ahead and deploy code. What's cool about this is it gives you that flexibility as you're using that portal that I just showed, where you can literally deploy your resources anywhere you want around the world in seconds. And really gives you the ability to kind of compete at a global level as your company looks to build solutions and or offer them elsewhere around the world. And each of these dots has a tremendous amount of capacity that you can leverage and take advantage of. So what I thought I'd do is just show a quick video of what one of these data center regions looked like and the type of horsepower that's involved inside them. So here's a video. Across all that infrastructure, we then provide the most comprehensive set of trust certifications that you can leverage as you run your business. So this is just a small sampling of the types of compliance certifications that we audit all of our services and all of our data centers for. And again, this gives you the flexibility to build and deliver solutions literally for any market, anywhere around that in the world, and be able to do it with the confidence necessary to really run your business. And today, we've got about 90% of the Fortune 500 companies, so the largest 500 companies in the world, now deployed and using Azure. And this is sort of a small sampling of just some of the logos of companies that are using us today. And I thought I'd show one more video, and we'll show a whole bunch more code, of a couple of customers that are leveraging and using this now.
Microsoft Azure gives us key cloud-based infrastructure that we need. We made a big decision to break down our existing platform, which was one big, large, monolithic lump of software, into a microservice architecture.
This Black Friday, we served 167 million requests in the 24 hours. Average page response times came down by about half a second. That's what you're looking for in a new platform.
Azure provides the glue that brings together the data from our internal on-premise systems and join that with information held in the cloud. We use Azure Application Services and also Azure SQL Database to provide the data resources to the application. To achieve single sign-in, we have federated across from Azure Active Directory to our Oracle Access Management.
And that was fantastic. That was the equivalent of putting a very old car on the moon.
We wanted to make it really easy for our customers to get meaning out of their data. The industrial Internet of Things is different only in the fact that our customers have very stringent requirements about how data moves. We want one place to egress that data that we can lock down. The advantage of it being Azure is IoT Hubs makes it very easy to get that data in. Power BI makes it very easy to visualize that data once it's there.
It allows us to put a data scientist in a box.
Microsoft helped us achieve our digital transformation. It's put us over the top. Geico's been growing leaps and bounds, and we have not had any issues whatsoever from a capacity perspective because of the on-demand capability and scalability of Azure. We can handle the volume. We're like, bring it on. We want more.
So in terms of Azure, you know, we're going to spend the rest of the keynote drilling into a couple of the different areas of capabilities that we provide. And what's nice about Azure is you can take advantage of Azure just for infrastructure, or you can take advantage of all these sort of higher level platform services that help you be even more successful and enable you to kind of move even faster as you build your applications and your solutions. And these range from data to analytics to IoT to mobile and web development and a bunch more. And what I thought I'd do is just drill into a couple of these sections, and we'll try to use with demos, show off a bunch of the cool stuff that you can now do, and again, hopefully bring together how all of it fits together in a clean way. How many people here are doing mobile development today? Right, a number of people are. You know, increasingly, you know, people are looking for, how do I deliver, you know, a great consumer experience directly to my customers, or to my employees? How do I make it work natively on a mobile device? And, you know, how do I connect it not just to a single platform, but really to all platforms out there, since both my employees as well as my end users are probably using a wide variety of different platforms. You know, one of the things that we focused on with both Azure and then with our overall Visual Studio tools is, you know, how do we make it really possible that you can go ahead and build a fantastic mobile experience? And we think there's a couple of things that are needed to do that. You need to be able to build beautiful native mobile apps that take full advantage of that platform and really feel natively integrated as part of whatever operating system that user is using. You need to be able to have a system that lets you really build, test, and distribute those applications and create a nice iterative loop across your dev team as you do so. And then you need a cloud on the back end that's able to actually not only distribute it, but able to provide the data and all the additional services necessary to build that fantastic mobile experience. And, you know, we're looking to do that and deliver that as part of the tooling and the cloud that we deliver. With Visual Studio 2017, we now have built-in Xamarin support that enables you to build fantastic native mobile app experiences for iOS, Android, and Windows. And what's great about the new VS 2017 support and a new capability we just shipped last week, we call our Live Viewer, is you can actually now develop iOS apps using VS without even having to have a Mac. You can actually just tether or pair your iPhone directly to that Windows-based PC and have a rich native development experience that you can leverage and take advantage of. We've also then recently just GA'd our Visual Studio for Mac release. And if you're a Visual Studio customer, we actually now provide you both the Windows and the Mac version as part of your subscription. And so you can also take advantage of a completely native Mac development experience using Visual Studio, using the same project and solution files. And with VS for Mac, we now support not only iOS and Android development, but also are adding now .NET Core as well as ASP.NET Core support, as well as tooling that enables you to easily deploy all those systems to Azure. And then the other great set of services that we now provide are a bunch of back-end services that you can use across a team environment so that as you build native mobile apps, whether it's with Xamarin or even with other technologies, whether it's a native Objective-C or Swift or Android experience or even something like React Native, where you can take advantage of build, testing, crash reports, and analytics services that we provide to kind of complete the development experience and make sure you deliver a really polished experience. And we call that Visual Studio Mobile Center, and that also now is deeply integrated directly inside our Visual Studio tools. What I thought I'd do is invite James on stage, who's a member of the Xamarin engineering team, to actually show off how all this stuff works and how easy it is to take advantage of. So I'll hand it over here to James.
I'm here. So Donovan told me to turn on my mic, so I should really turn on my mic. Yeah. Oh my goodness, Scott, I'm so excited to be here. You asked me to come up yet again to be back at Dev Intersection. I could not be more excited. If you know me, you know that I love mobile development more than Donovan loves DevOps. I've been doing so for 7 years with Xamarin. So I want to just go ahead and jump right into a demo here inside of Visual Studio. So let's hop over to one real quick. Boom. Nope, wrong one. One. Boom. It ruined my surprise. So what I want to do today is walk you through the three things that Scott just told you. The beautiful development experience inside of Visual Studio, VS Mac, and Mobile Center. So where it all starts is file new. I've installed the Xamarin workload, so now, of course, I have my Android, iOS, tvOS for Apple TV applications, and even brand new cross-platform applications. This will scaffold your ASP.NET Core backend, your iOS, Android, and UWP applications all with one click. It's wonderful. And it'll deploy immediately to your backend and spin up everything. Now, we have world-class tools to do all sorts of development for iOS, Android, and all of your different Windows workloads. We have amazing remote simulators for iOS, but we wanted to make it drop-dead simple from, I just installed, I want to get it on my device. That shouldn't take me a lot of time. In fact, it should take me just a few seconds. So what I have here is the master detail application, and it's running here for both iOS and Android. So what I have here is my iPhone. It's just right here, and what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna screen mirror it over to my my PC, as long as it, oh, it has disconnected from the internet, so that is fantastic. You know, you leave the stage for a minute, and it all goes down. All right. Uh-oh. Internet. What do? You connect to Scott Goo's MacBook Pro. Let's see here. When in doubt, unplug the network cable, plug it back in, ! All right, we'll give it a second. Oh, okay, things are happening here. This is good. All right. Oh my goodness, it's happening. All right, I like that. No IP, that's good. Perfect. All right. Internet sharing is on. Oh my goodness, oh, whoo! All right. Oh. Now, when Scott told me that I was going to join Microsoft, it told me that it would automatically connect to VPN over and over and over again. So let's just go ahead and disconnect. We don't need, look at that. This is the welcome to Microsoft. One more time. Nope. There. Okay. All right, cool, we're good. All right, let's boot up Reflector. All right. So ideally here. In a world, see, Scott had it easy. He could just plug it into his Mac. He said, no, no Mac allowed. Everything with from just a PC. So let's go ahead and pair this puppy. Boom. 4, 3, 2, 7. Oh, there we go. Cool. So what I have here is I'm just screen mirroring, just kind of like Scott did. Now, what I want to do is essentially pair my actual iPhone to Visual Studio. So what I do is I go into Tools, and I go into Xamarin Live Player Managed Devices. And you can connect any iOS or Android device right here. All you do is scan a QR code. So if I pop this up, scan this QR code. There we go. Boom. It's just that fast. It's crazy, lightning fast. It's going to connect to Visual Studio. And then what we see inside of here is I have my iPhone player installed in my debug menu. So when I hit debug, it immediately it was so fast that I have to resize Visual Studio. It immediately sends it over right here on my device. Like, this is the real thing. Like, I just hit debug and it goes. I'm not connected to anything else besides my iPhone. What's cool here is, like, of course, I could leave feedback, but I could just browse around and say, oh, I want to find out about me. So as I tap on an item, I'm in a real live debugging session. I can hover over the specific item. So here's this one here. And we're actually sending all the bits, everything, and we have a debugger running on your iPhone. It's bananas. So I can continue on. There we go. And use the application. But we said we could do one better, because debugging with nothing more than Visual Studio 2017 and an iPhone isn't amazing enough. What if I want to just kind of work on a screen, and I want to kind of actively develop it out? So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to set the iPhone down. And I actually have like a lift-type driver iPhone thing in front of my PC at home. It's bananas. It's awesome. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, let's go to that XAML page. And I'm going to go into Tools, Xamarin Live Player, Live Run Current View. So whatever file I'm on, run it, and immediately it's on my device. Okay? What's cool here, though, is I'm not debugging. I'm just going in, and I'm going to slap down some new XAML from my shared XAML that I have here. And just like that, it updates. I didn't even save. I want you to notice that there's a star there. I didn't even save. Yeah. Yeah. part of the demo, of course, that we love red. So as soon as I change it to red, it updates instantaneously. I don't have to do anything. I can modify my XAML. I can modify my code behind. And I can be super productive and up and running in just a few minutes for both iOS and Android with the Xamarin Live Player. And this is available today. You can do everything that I just showed you. All my code is on GitHub and, of course, all the great samples. So that's mind-blowing. And I have great sessions here at Dev Intersection all on Xamarin. But I want to show you more, because Donovan and I had a bet of how long we could go before Scott kicks us off, so I want to go to the next demo. Let's head over to 6, because I love my Visual Studio 2017, but I work with all sorts of developers with all sorts of different machines. In fact, I have my little MacBook Adorable here in rose gold. It's beautiful. Everyone should own one. It's great, and I want to just get on the go. right? So I have Visual Studio for Mac. Every single thing that I just showed you in Visual Studio can be done in Visual Studio for Mac. So I have all my recent projects. I can come into New Project, and here's our dialogue for getting started. All my Xamarin workloads, my .NET Core workloads for my backend services, but also my ASP.NET Core websites. I also, of course, have Mac application and tvOS application. On top of this, we have optional workloads, including Azure Functions, Docker support, and if you're a Unity developer, boom, we have support for Unity game development inside of Visual Studio for Mac. So when you get started with an application, let's say cross-platform, we want to get really started fast. So I just say new project, I can name it, and with one click, add an ASP.NET Core Web API backend project. So I've done that here ahead of time, so let me go ahead and minimize this down. And this is the same exact project that I had earlier, except for I've modified and I brought in a .NET standard code base over here to share code between both my iOS, Android, Windows, and ASP.NET Core backend. So I'm sharing .NET code absolutely everywhere. So what I can do is I can come up to Visual Studio for Mac, and I can debug iOS, Android, or my ASP.NET Core backend, or I can come in and say custom configuration to debug both my ASP.NET Core backend and my iOS application. So what this will do is it'll compile everything up here running on .NET Core to spin up my ASP.NET website and deploy it right to my iPhone simulator right on the Mac. So here we go. Here's that same exact application. And that should boot up. There we go. It launches into my local host. I should have a Swagger definition in here. There we go. I can go and see on my items. Boom. Now, what's cool is that I'm actually using my Swagger definition. I hit a breakpoint because I'm debugging my actual website. So I can continue on and see that I actually have a C#. It's very sharp. It's very lovely, which means I can come back into my actual application. I refresh, and it's hitting that backend immediately. So what's beautiful here is that I could come in, add a new item, save it in here. I am now debugging my iOS application at the same time that I'm debugging my ASP.NET Core website. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And of course, you can come in, you can look at your items. I can say, text Scott Goo is amazing. Save it off. Now it'll be saved, so I'm intercepting it before it goes off. Now I'm again hitting that ASP.NET Core backend, and then boom, I have everything coming in. I could then launch my iOS, Android applications side by side. But of course, this is great. I'm debugging locally, but I want to shove it up in Azure, because that's what I want to do. So here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to come in to my ASP.NET Core application, and all I have to do is say publish to Azure. Since I'm logged in with my Microsoft account, it'll go off and query all of my services and subscriptions here. I can, with one click, take a look at my group or create a new one. And this will allow me to automatically provision all my subscriptions, resource groups, everything that I want, and then just publish. It'll bundle up, release everything into my release mode, and then publish my backend immediately to Azure. In fact, I already have it running right here. Boom. Pretty cool. Now, the next step that I have in mobile development is that I want to be able to not only build beautiful applications, push them up to Azure, but I want to kind of have something super optimized. Oh, there it goes. Now it's running again. See, it actually does work. And it's perfect. Boom. No trickery. Is that I want to have that final step, is that I want to continuously build, deploy, test, and have amazing lifecycle services for any of my applications. So that's where Visual Studio Mobile Center comes in. It's a mission control for any of your mobile applications written in any language. Of course, you know me, you should write it in C# with Xamarin. But if you have some legacy apps that you gotta support, it's okay. Now notice here that you can log in with your GitHub credentials, Microsoft, Facebook, Google, or just register for a new account. It's your choice. When you come in, you have all of your teams and all of your applications. We've merged together Mobile Center with Hockey App. So we'll automatically import all of your Hockey App applications that you may have already used and all of their data. So I have all sorts of different applications from not only me, but people on my team. Now, if I want to add a new one, I just say new app. And down here, I have an owner. I can pick between iOS, Android, and UWP applications and the framework that I'm using. It just takes a few seconds to get started up. So let me open up a more complex application, the Bike Rider application here. When I tap on one of those, I have all of my lifecycle services, build, test, distribute, backend services, crash reporting, and push notifications. So when I come into build, I'm going to go out and query all of my branches that are actually being hosted in VSTS. You can point Mobile Center at VSTS, GitHub, or Bitbucket. So no matter where your code lives, you can automatically generate build scripts with just a few clicks. So here's all my branches. Here's our master branch. I could kick off a new build. I could look at the last build. As it's building, I get real build output. Or here, it'll actually give me the full output if I want it. Let's go back over here and hit the little tool to edit this. What's really powerful is that this will automatically find all of your Xcode projects, Visual Studio projects, Android Studio projects, anything. Here it knows that I have these different configurations for debug release. I can pick my version of Xcode. How do I want to sign it? Do I want to incrementally increase the build number? I can upload my provisioning profiles and they'll be encrypted on our servers. And what's great is that after it builds, which is going to be on a machine that we provision for you, you don't have it at all, it's up in a cloud, it's gone. We handle it all for you. You don't have to worry about it. We can automatically generate a launch screen test that will validate that every single time you push code, it builds and runs on physical devices with just one click. So let me show you what that looks like. Here's all my tests. You can have it automatically do tests or create your own build and test scripts with any popular framework like Xamarin UI Tests or Appium. So here's a sign-in test for this bike rider application. Let me do a more complex one because 2 is good, but 28 is better. So I've run these tests on 28 different devices. These are all real physical iPhone devices, and I can see it to make sure that I'm not crashing when I log into my users. I can tap on one of them and get the actual real screenshot, memory usage, CPU usage, duration on the device. And when I know a build is ready to go, right inside of here, I can distribute. I can set up all of my different test teams, internal or external, and if I want to, I can immediately deploy it to the Apple App Store, Google Play, or my internal Intune. And finally, we have all of your crash reporting, metrics, analytics, everything that you need for your mobile center, for your mobile applications inside a mobile center. From start to finish, building beautiful iOS, Android, and Windows apps with Xamarin, all the way to continuously building it and deploying it with Mobile Center. We know you're simply going to love it. Thanks.
I wish I could just have half the energy that James has for 10 minutes of my life. If we can switch back now to machine 2. You know, the cool thing that what James just showed you was just a whole bunch of stuff that you can take advantage of. If you're a Visual Studio customer today, you have access to all that. That's all built in now to Visual Studio, regardless of whether you want to develop on Windows or on a Mac. And again, you can use all that technology to target iOS, Android, and Windows app development, and really provides an amazing way to build these types of native, really rich experiences. We got tons of customers that are using and taking advantage of Xamarin today. This is just a logo wall of some of them. And again, they're using it both for employee-facing apps and for their end-user apps. You know, one of our big customers is UPS. That's going live with the apps that, again, they're the people that actually deliver the packages use, but also what end-users can use to actually query the status of their package. And now they can take advantage of a single mobile development technology. It enables them to build across all those platforms, reuse and maximize code, and just have an amazing development experience. So, you know, what does every app that has a client-facing element also need? And that is a data backend. And you know, one of the things that I hear a lot as from developers at events like this is, you know, please let me use the database of my choice. Databases tend to be those things that people want pried out of their cold, dead hands, that you love a database, you want to be able to use it. And that's one of the things that we're looking to make possible with Azure and with our cloud. The second thing we often hear is, you know, how can I actually use my database not just as a VM, but can you provide that same type of platform set of services, similar to what James showed with that Visual Studio Mobile Center, where you take care of patching for me, you can enable the high availability, and you let me really focus more on how do I actually get my job done and build amazing experiences with it. So let's talk a little bit about how we're doing that with Azure and with the Microsoft Cloud. You know, one of the things that I know there's a bunch of talks here at this event on is SQL Server 2017, which is an amazing new release that we're coming out with later this summer with a ton of new capability and enhancements. What's cool about SQL 2017 is it's the first version of SQL Server that runs not just on Windows, but also now runs on Linux-based systems and will run in any Docker-based system. So you can host on a Mac, you can host on any system capable of running Docker. And you know, for the first time ever, you can now take advantage of SQL literally everywhere as you build and do projects. This is the fastest release of SQL 2017 we've ever shipped. And with the preview release, we're already number one in pretty much all of the major database benchmarks out there. And this is also a release that has not just kind of core database functionality, but also has in-memory support for doing advanced analytics, which means that you can actually take your SQL databases and you can start to use standard R and Python scripts that you can embed as stored procedures inside those databases to perform real-time analytic operations and machine learning on top of the data that you store, which enables you to build much smarter applications and really push the boundaries of machine learning while at the same time using the great SQL that you know. And what's nice about SQL Server is it's the only database platform out there that is available to run literally everywhere. So you can run it in a VM, you can run it on bare metal in your existing data centers and your existing enterprise deployments, but you can also run it as a service up in Azure. And the nice thing is you have the same feature set, the same APIs, the same management tools, the same development model, regardless of whether you're managing it on your own infrastructure or whether you basically take advantage of SQLDB running in the cloud where we provide it for you as a service. And one of the things that we just announced last week is a new database migration service that makes it very easy to take pretty much any SQL database you have out there and easily migrate it into the cloud without having to make code changes and without even having to have any application downtime. And with a new set of updates that were coming out later this year, you'll even be able to have active deployments between the cloud as a service and on-premises with your existing environment. And it gives you maximum flexibility in a way that no other cloud platform delivers. How many people here use SQL databases today? SQL Server, SQL Database. Great. Tell you what, let's do a couple quick demos then of what you can take advantage of with it. So let's go back into Azure here, and let's create a new database. So when you want to stand up a new database in your work environment, how long does it take you to get a new database provisioned when you ask IT or you ask your administrator to go create one for you?
5 seconds.
5 seconds, okay, that's good. A couple days, okay. Someone once told me 9 months. That sounded really bad. Let's go create one real quick here. So we're going to create a new database, and so what would you like to call this database?
Red Shirt.
Red Shirt. I believe that I might have already got a database called that. But Red Shirt, no, okay, good, it works. So we're going to go ahead and we'll create a Red Shirt database. Let's go ahead and we'll just create a blank database. Hey, let's create it in Europe just for giggles, and we're going to go ahead and pin it to the dashboard and click Create. And so we filled out some details here. We chose where in the world we want to deploy it. And it's now going ahead and being provisioned inside Azure. And so what's happening under the covers inside Azure here is we're automatically creating a new database for you, setting up the right permissions for it. And we're going to set up this database to run automatically on 3 separate servers, on 3 separate racks with 3 separate network supplies. And that basically guarantees that if one of the servers goes down, we can fail over your database automatically and enable high availability for it. That's something that's just sort of built into the service, even for the version that costs like $5 a month, and you get to basically take advantage of. The other things we're going to do for this database automatically for you is patch it, so that anytime we need to update the code or the underlying OS, we do that for you. You don't have to. And also we do automatic backups, both in terms of deep backups that you can restore from, but we also have a cool feature built in called point-in-time recovery, which basically means we can restore to any point in the last 30 days down to an individual transaction or millisecond level so that you can regenerate a new database for you in case you accidentally delete it. And that's all built in. And what's cool is we just deployed it. The Red Shirt database is now ready to use. That was literally how easy and how fast it was for us to stand up this database, in this case here in Europe. And I can now grab the connection string and literally start developing against it. I can point SQL Management Studio against it. And again, everything just works. And I don't have to do anything more in order to leverage this for production workloads. Now, a couple of cool things about our database service is not just that we let you run it and it's really fast. The other thing I'll mention is if you don't want the database anymore, you can also delete it. And So we're going to delete this database now that we've created it. It's now gone. And I basically only pay for the minutes of the database that I actually used. And so this is going to cost me like one millionth of a penny to do that demo. And so I get that agility, that speed, and it's really, really fast in order to take advantage of. So the other things we're going to talk about that we have built in that are kind of cool is a bunch of support that enables you to kind of optimize the running of your database as it's running in production. Anyone here ever write an app that caused the database to slow down? Only two people. Let's all look at them. No, we've all done that. So one of the things that we have built in now is kind of a cool feature inside SQL DB, and it's, again, one of these things that we're trying to do, how do we make you successful and help provide some of the tools around it, is, in this case here, I've got a database. It's being hit quite a bit, and you'll notice that we now say, hey, we think there's something wrong with the database, or we can make it better. Why don't you click this little link? What this brings up is a built-in set of tools that we have built in now, which do automatic profiling and analysis of your database to be able to help you improve the speed and the performance of it. And so in this case here, we've detected you're missing a couple indexes, and you're also doing some queries that, if they were parameterized, would actually yield much, much better performance. And so for each of these things, you can click. We actually now tell you, for example, for this particular recommendation, here's what you should change. And if you want to, here is actually the script to go ahead and execute inside SQL Management Studio or SQL, and this will then dramatically improve the performance of this database. And again, you could do this today with a SQL profiler manually and have a DBA analyze it, but the nice thing is the system is sort of taking advantage of a bunch of machine learning now behind the covers to do that for you automatically, again, help you optimize this workload and be able to run it even better. Anyone here ever written code that had a SQL injection attack? Yeah, it happens, and I think probably more people have done it than raised their hand, but that's okay. What's a common scenario when you have a SQL injection attack? You know, it's, let's say I want to type in, and I'm a user, and you know, I want to type in my password, and you know, a hacker will come around and say, hey, you know what we could do? We could actually just paste this thing in here, and let's see whether or not they've correctly encoded that password. And if they haven't, then this or 1=1 is going to automatically log me in as that into the system, even if the password is incorrect. Hit log in. Oh, sure enough, it seemed to work. And you know, I've got a SQL injection attack, and I potentially have got an issue underway. So one of the things that we also have built in now inside SQL DB is what we call threat detection. And again, this is using some built-in machine learning that we have automatically in the product. And what it'll tell you is anytime we see activity against your database that looks suspicious. And so in this case here, it said, hey, I think you have a SQL injection attack actually happening against your system. It'll tell you when and where and who actually tried to do it. And it'll actually show, hey, this is actually the SQL that was executed against the database, which looks mighty suspicious to us. We can't guarantee that this is an injection attack, but it certainly looks like it. And not only will you see it in the management portal, but if you set it up, we'll automatically call either an API, or we can go ahead and actually send you an email that basically says, we think you're being attacked. Please log in. Here are the steps to verify if you're being attacked, and here's actually what you should do to take action to protect yourself against it. Again, this is sort of a built-in feature of the service to, again, help guide you to build, you know, secure apps by default and to make sure that the systems you build are really enduring and protect your business. Whole bunch more capabilities that we have built into SQL DB, but you know, hopefully you get a sense from some of those types of simple demos, you know, some of what we're doing to try to, again, make you more successful, enable you to build more secure apps, and again, enable you to move a lot faster. People may have heard of DocuSign. They're one of kind of the great unicorn startups out there. Anyone here use DocuSign today? They do document management. They both for companies use it for contracts, but also if you buy a house or refinance a mortgage, decent chances you'll now do it electronically using DocuSign. And one of the things that they just announced was they're actually moving to Azure and actually going to be running their SaaS service in Azure going forward. You know, what I thought I'd do is just play a little video of them talking about why. And it really was the power of the SQL DB service that did it. Oh, we can turn up the volume on my machine.
Their most important business. For so many of our customers, their transactions are personal. We garner our customers' trust every day. Trust is the sort of thing that you earn in a lifetime and lose in an instant. We process 1.1 million transactions per day on our platform. Our transaction volume approximately doubles every year. What that means for me is that we are constantly scaling and evolving. We wanted the best of what we do in our data center, which is reliable SQL servers on flash storage, with the best of what Azure could bring to it, which is globally expanding, rapid deployment, high scale, with the best of what the SQL team could bring to it, which is a deep knowledge of the product and help in managing this thing at scale. And for us, we found that Azure SQL Database was the best way to do it. We deploy our SQL Server schema elements into a managed instance, and we point the application via connection string change directly over to the managed instance.
We basically picked up our existing build infrastructure, and we're able to deploy to Azure within a few seconds. It allows us to scale the business very quickly with very minimal effort.
The holy grail in a move like this is being able to lift your existing platform, move it into Azure without significant amounts of work, without having to re-engineer things. And at the other side of that, get the incredible value that Azure brings to the table. Our hope is that Azure becomes the way we do global expansion. We want to help customers all over the world bring their paper processes into the digital world to allow us to be the accelerant that they need to move faster and faster into this digital transformation.
So in addition to SQL databases, we're also adding new relational database services, just like you saw from SQLDB, for other database variants as well. Anyone here use Postgres? One person, okay. Anyone here use MySQL? A couple more people, great. Well, you know, we now have inside Azure both Postgres as a service and MySQL as a service, which provide that same type of experience that I showed with SQLDB, where you can basically spin one up literally in about 60 seconds, has high availability automatically turned on and built in. It's the full MySQL Postgres engine, so you can actually run any code, any driver, any framework against it, and you can take any standard MySQL or Postgres management tool and point it against it as well, and not basically not have to change any code against it. And what's nice is, just like SQLDB, you can scale them up and scale them down quickly, but you can also resize the database dynamically with zero application downtime, which makes it ideal for basically tuning the size of your database and getting the best value out of it from a cost perspective. So in addition to kind of relational databases, let's talk also about data, what I call planet scale. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing increasingly and hearing from a lot of people is, as I'm building these systems, in particular ones that are talking to your customers, where you have mobile apps or you have web apps, increasingly you've got more volume of data than probably ever before. And often you now have users all over the world that are looking to access your systems in a way that never happened before as well. And so one of the things that, we were really excited to announce last week is a new database service that we're offering in Azure that we call Cosmos DB. And this is the first globally distributed multi-model database service. What do I mean by that? Well, basically, the cool thing about Cosmos DB is that you deploy it not just in a single region, although you can if you want to, but you can actually deploy it in multiple regions around the world. So for example, you could have an instance of it running in the east part of the US, the central part of the US, and the west part of the US, and have the data seamlessly synchronize across it pretty much in real time, and be able to have your applications hit whichever database is closest to the particular user that's actually accessing your service. You could also scale it out around the world and have literally 40 regions of Cosmos DB deployed and literally have them constantly in sync with each other. What's cool is it also enables what's called multi-model and multi-API. So in other words, you can store data in Cosmos DB in kind of a more of a relational model and use a sort of a SQL-like API against it. But you can also store documents and use a different API or a key value pair, column family, or a graph of data that's interconnected with each other and use a variety of different APIs against it. This gives you maximum flexibility to be able to use lots of different types of data based on the particular scenario you care about and be able to use whatever API you want against it. It's designed to really scale to massive amounts of data. So you could start with a database that was maybe just a few gigabytes in size, but you can scale it up to be literally petabytes of data. You can start with just, say, 100 transactions per second, and ultimately then scale it to be millions of transactions each second along the way. And it's also designed to provide rich set of SLAs, not just around availability, meaning is the database there, but we can also provide performance latency guarantees, where we'll guarantee that the transactions you put against that this database are processed in under 10 milliseconds, which gives you kind of the ability, even when you have millions of requests per second executing against it, to be able to scale and know reliably that your system is going to work at a very, very high level. Jet.com is one of the big customers that runs on Azure today. They're a startup that was bought by Walmart about a year or two ago for about $3.5 billion. And they're one of the real sort of shining examples of a startup that started on Azure, launched their product within 12 months of forming the company, and has had tremendous success. What I thought I'd do is just play a quick video of them talking about their experience and then talk specifically about how they're leveraging Cosmos DB. Here's that video.
E-commerce is probably the most exciting game in town these days. Jet.com is a mass market e-commerce site.
We have over 31 million SKUs. You want to buy it, we carry it.
Our approach is really around how we present savings to the consumer. Jet came out of the gate day one with really massive scale and massive growth. Data for Jet is scale.
Microsoft Azure is really critical to our vision because it scales with us.
One of the amazing things about the Azure platform is it allowed us to go from not having a single line of code to having a fully functional e-commerce site in about 12 months. We've made our biggest bet on Cosmos DB. We're moving into the GPU world, machine learning, AI, personalization, recommendations, all the way that data surfaces the consumer. It's really what drives a killer customer experience at Jet. E-commerce is going to be a $1 trillion business in the next 5 to 10 years.
We bring our whole personalities into the experience. It's fun, it's witty, and it's very human.
You name it, we're doing it here at Jet.
So Jet runs at massive scale, and they deploy both their app as well as their data using Cosmos DB across three separate regions in the US. This gives them the ability to have very, very fast responsiveness and massive high availability. And you know, they were actually able to scale up the Cosmos DB instance they used to support 100 trillion transactions in a single day during Black Friday, which is the peak holiday season time for e-commerce online sites, and were able to achieve, again, single-digit performance latency at the 99th percentile, which is something no other data service out there on the planet offers. And the cool thing about all this is not only were they able to scale at these tremendous levels, but it was really easy for them to go ahead and do it, and actually build and take advantage of these services to deliver at this scale. And so what I thought I'd do is let's go ahead and switch back to Machine 5 and show off a quick demo of what this looks like in action. So what I thought I'd do is actually show off kind of a simple app, and then we'll dive into the code for how it actually works. And this is sort of a comics wiki app. Anyone here a Marvel comics fan? A few people, there you go. And so this is taking advantage of the graph structure capability of Cosmos DB to make it possible not just to sort of show content in a wiki format, but to actually ask interesting questions that really require a graph database to answer. So what do I mean by that? So for example, who are your friends? So this is Tony Stark. I'm going to enter, and you'll basically see it brought back some answers here in terms of the types of friends that Tony Stark has. And what it's doing is executing a query to be able to see who is Tony related to in the graph and be able to have a one-to-many relationship across any number of items. Now, you could do that in a couple different ways, but what's nice about a graph is I could do this not just from, a friends, but I could even make it complicated, like who are your enemies that work for Hydra? So I'm basically making a dependency where I'm traversing multiple nodes in the graph. And then when I execute that, you can see it basically brings back all those results. And it happens very quickly, and it's basically able to make that kind of sub-millisecond type of query against that graph system to do so. So how do I build this? So we're going to go back into the Azure Management Portal, in this case here on a Mac, and I can go ahead and create a new Cosmos DB instance. And you saw me earlier create a SQL database. What I can go ahead and do is click on this databases section here, and I can also go ahead and click now and create a Cosmos DB database. And one of the things I can do when I create this Cosmos DB database, I just give it a name, And I can basically choose what type of API I want to have by default. And you'll notice that one of the APIs here is a Gremlin API, which is Graph. And Gremlin is a popular open source API for traversing graph-based databases. And so all I need to do is give it a name, pick Gremlin, choose where I want to run in the world, hit create, and similar like that SQLDB experience, in about 60 seconds, I'd have a Cosmos DB database populated that I can now go ahead and manage and use. And I have one that, it's just in the interest of time, that I've already created and loaded some data into that we'll go ahead and launch and actually take a look at here. And this is a graph-based database, so I'm going to go ahead and go into the Data Explorer here. And I'm going to look at the heroes in this database and run a query. And one of the things we've built into the overall management experience is a view so that you can actually see what this data looks like, again, in a graph-based format. And so instead of a traditional relational set of tables, you can actually see a whole bunch of entities in this database that are all interconnected. And right now there's GUIDs, which is not super easy to see. So let's just go ahead and say, instead of showing the ID, let's actually go ahead and show the name of our superhero. And now you can actually see the relationship across, hopefully you can see if I can zoom in a little bit, across a lot of these different items. And again, in a very graph-based format. And I can write arbitrary queries here inside this system if I wanted to. Or in this case here, the code that I actually used was just a simple Node.js app. And I imported the Gremlin library. This is the standard open source Gremlin Node.js library. There's one for .NET, there's one for Java, there's one for Python and others. And then I can basically just go ahead and generate a query and execute against it using my language of choice whenever I want to basically query and use this system. And that's how easy it is to stand up. That's how easy it is to see and visualize the data and be able to kind of work with it in a rich way. Now what makes DocDB or makes Cosmos DB super powerful is the global nature of it. And so what's nice about this particular database instance is you can see I'm running it in many places around the world. So I've got a lot of places in the US where I basically deployed the system. But if I wanted to, for example, let's say run it in, say, I don't know, Singapore, I could click, I could hit save. And this is now automatically replicating this data with zero downtime to also be populated inside Singapore. So if I want to reach the Asian market, this basically now is available for me in my application to have, again, sub-millisecond response time to that part of the world, with the exact same data that I'm basically having here in the US. My app can just write it once and know that it's going to be replicated everywhere. Now, one of the challenges you have when you want to replicate database in a distributed way is also trying to figure out, you know, how do you think about transactions in the same way that maybe you've thought of in the past in a relational way? And you know, most relational databases have what's called strong consistency, meaning you write a transaction and it guarantees the transaction doesn't complete until it's consistent across that database. In a place where you have, say, 28 instances of your database running around the world, you can still have strong consistency, but it's going to take longer to replicate that data in 28 places before it commits, which is why we also give you the flexibility to use alternative consistency models as well. So, for example, you could have what's called eventual consistency, which basically says, commit the transaction as soon as it's guaranteed to be persisted in one region, and then automatically roll it out over, say, a second or two across all the other regions, and don't block on that. And that's really useful for, say, content updates of a CMS system, where you don't need that atomic transactions that you might need for something like financials. And then the cool thing is you can also pick different consistency levels, like session level, where you can just say, as one user hits my site, make sure they always see consistent data, regardless of where in the world they're accessing it. But other than that, commit immediately and make sure that we don't block the system for everyone else. And the cool thing is you have all this flexibility at your fingertips, and so you can choose the best consistency model for your particular application. And then lastly, once it's actually running, I mentioned those SLAs around not just availability, but around performance and throughput and others as well. And so if I go ahead and click on the metrics view here, I can actually see what those metrics look like across my system and basically get kind of a real-time, up-to-date view for how my application's doing and whether or not Azure's meeting my SLA. And again, all that's built in. It's really easy to take advantage of, and that global cloud scale enables you to build apps that just weren't possible a few years ago and be able to do it really easy and really cost-effectively. So let's switch back to machine two. Talk about a few more things. And as I mentioned, you know, this Cosmos DB service that we announced is now available. So everything that we've shown, all the demos here this evening, you know, you can basically start taking advantage of and using yourself now as well. How many people here are starting to look at container-based development approaches and microservices? Great. Yeah, I think, you know, containers is one of the things that we're certainly seeing as both on-premises and in the cloud as being kind of this real enabler of much more agile, much more microservice-based architectures, and something that I think, you know, a lot of systems are going to move to take advantage of starting this year and even more so over the next couple years. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we often hear from people is, okay, how do I adopt a container-based system? What does that look like? And in particular, how do I move from where I am today, where I might have a lot of existing code that wasn't built with containers, that wasn't built with microservices in mind? How do I easily update that code and move it into a container-based world without having to rewrite everything, which we'd all love to rewrite our apps, but most of us don't have the luxury of being able to do that at any particular point in time. Alaska Airlines is one customer of ours that is now the fifth largest airline in the US. They just recently merged with Virgin America. And you know, they had that problem and they were looking to kind of modernize their code and figure out how they actually make that transition to a microservice-based approach. What I thought I'd do is just play a quick video and then we'll show off a demo of some of the great work that we're doing that makes it easy to do that. So let's watch the video.
Alaska Airlines recently merged with Virgin America, and together we became the fifth largest airline in the United States. The commerce organization at Alaska Airlines has really two big goals. One is to continue to drive guest satisfaction. The other big goal is for us to be able to test and learn. We believe that any code that isn't in production is waste.
Running our applications on Azure unlocks a lot of possibilities in terms of how we're able to deploy. It allows us to iterate more rapidly. We're able to experiment with a lot of different things and find what works best to serve our guests and give them the best experience. Breaking down our systems into microservices has enabled us to start taking pieces that are good candidates and moving them up into the cloud.
We use Azure Service Fabric to make sure once those containers are running, that we can easily put new versions out, that they still run, and when our demands grow, that it grows with it. We also use the Visual Studio Team Services build pipeline to compile our code and make sure that it's working, run tests, and then package up our Docker images. We upload those Docker images to Azure Container Registry.
I think the biggest win for us recently was last Cyber Monday. It was hassle-free. We could scale up and down without any fear, and we were able to have completely uninterrupted service for our guests. We grow customer loyalty by providing an awesome e-commerce experience. By using Azure, we're able to get ideas out to market faster and to test and see how our guests experience them and see if they move the needle on our business objectives.
So one of the things that we've shipped with VS 2017 is really rich native container development support. And this basically enables you to kind of leverage Docker and the Docker ecosystem to basically take any code, whether it's a new greenfield project or whether it's an existing project that has code that you've been managing potentially for 15 or more years, and wrap it into a container. Start to use the Dockerfile and Docker Compose framework to basically represent those microservices, and then very easily develop, debug, test, and deploy that code directly inside the IDE. And then we've also, with Visual Studio Team Services, which is our cloud-based services for doing development, now easily enable an end-to-end DevOps support model so that you can go ahead and very easily do this in a continuous fashion and do it across a team-based environment. What I'd love to do is invite Donovan here on stage to kind of show off how do you basically modernize an existing app, you know, one that has existing .NET Framework 4.6 or earlier code. So it's not .NET Core, it's not a new app that was built for microservices in mind. This is an app that maybe started 10 years ago. How do you actually take that code base, containerize it, and then start to take advantage of a microservice architecture? So here's Donovan to show off how you can do it.
Thanks, Scott. Good evening, everyone. Let's try that again. Good evening, everyone. Perfect. By now, you have seen plenty of containerized demos. But have you noticed they're all running Java or Node.js on a Linux machine?
I got excited once. The guy said, I'm going to do .NET Core. But when he was done, it was still running on a Linux machine. So for me, a long-time .NET developer with an existing code base happily running inside of IIS on Windows, those demos meant nothing to me. As a matter of fact, they frightened me because now I think I have to rewrite all of my code before I can start utilizing the power of containers. So I did what any rational human being would do. I told myself that containers, they're not cool. How could they be? They don't work on Windows, right? Clearly, I was in the first stage of container grief, denial, right? And then I would see demo after demo, and I would get so angry. Why are you showing this to me? It doesn't work for me. Then I start thinking to myself, you know what? Java, it looks a lot like C Sharp. Maybe I could rewrite it. Or better yet, let's go to JavaScript. There, I heard their functions can even have functions. It's crazy over there. So I go and I start bargaining with my managers, trying to get them to let me do it, and they all say no, so I get depressed. But I stand here before you in the final stages of container grief, acceptance, because I can now accept that containers are cool. Why? Because Visual Studio and Azure allow me to take my existing code bases and run it inside of a container. Let me show you how it works. On my screen here, three. Perfect. So on my screen here, you have a typical solution with two ASP.NET projects, both happily running inside IIS on Windows. And what I want to do now is turn these into containerized applications. So what do I need to do? I just need to tap into my innermost Visual Studio instincts and do what comes natural and start right-clicking on everything. And then there you'll find it. Add Docker support. Clicking this button is going to allow Visual Studio to spring into action and add everything it needs to take my applications and turn them into containerized applications. Did you notice how many lines of code I changed? Zero. Don't change a single line of your code. Just right-click like you know you should, and what you're going to get out of it is a Docker file and a Compose file. Because remember, I have two containers I need to spin up, and the Compose file will spin those up for me. Now, I know what you're thinking. That looks too easy. There has to be a catch. Now that he has two containers, I bet he needs two instances of Visual Studio to debug it. We're way ahead of you. So let me show you what I mean by that. Here, I happen to have the application already running, spun up locally using containers. I actually have three containers running. The SQL database is actually running in a container as well. But I want to debug this. So if I were to come in now and click on my application, I instantly go inside of Visual Studio. But please note, I'm down here inside of my web application. The fun begins when I actually continue debugging. So if I press F5 here, I'm now at a different breakpoint. But look very closely. I'm now up here inside my app service that is actually supporting that particular website. I can now debug across containers. But I have the full power of Visual Studio. So for example, I can come over here. I can hover over my data tip. I can pin it into my source code. And I can even use this data tip if I want to send messages. Now, the coolest thing about containers, in my opinion, is now that I've seen them run locally on my machine, I know it's safe to run anywhere in the world. I can actually use the power of Azure to spin up a cluster, deploy my application there, and use the power of the cloud to scale my application. The real question is, how do I get it off of my local machine and get it into the cloud? So what I'm going to do right now, and I think some of you are waiting for me to do, is I'm going to rub a little DevOps on this, and I'm going to make it better. And what's really cool about this is, you know what I have to do? Again, harness the power of Visual Studio and just right-click. And right here, it says configure continuous delivery. Make no mistake, this is not right-click and publish. If it was, it would have to be publish plus plus. It's so much more. It creates an entire CI and CD pipeline in Visual Studio Team Services. And it allows us to take every commit of our developers and push it into Azure. It actually understands that we are working with containers. When you have containers, you have to actually produce images. And those images need to be stored in a registry. Because my cluster is in Azure, it only makes sense that my images should be in Azure as well. So using Azure Container Registry, I will be able to store my images very close to the cluster in which they're going to run. So let me show you what happens when you go ahead and commit to this. What we end up with here is actually a entire CI/CD pipeline built inside of Team Services. Team Services is everything that you need to turn an idea into a working piece of software for any language targeting any platform. And here, we're letting it do Docker for us as well. So what we do is it downloads the code, it builds it, runs your unit test, then builds an image for you, and then pushes that image into Azure Container Registry. Just because we generate it for you doesn't mean that you're stuck with what we generated. If you'd like, you can come here, click on Add, and add any of the tasks that we provide for you. As you'll notice, there's one there for Aqua Security that allows you to scan your images for vulnerabilities before you push them into the registry. If you don't see what you need, you can write your own, or better yet, you can go to our marketplace. And our marketplace allows you to see all of the extensions written by all of the different people using Team Services, and you can add those to your team project and start actually using that value in your DevOps pipeline. Once we're done with our build, it's now time to take the images that are safely stored in ACR and deploy them into our cluster. What's so impressive here is that no matter how many images you're trying to deploy, it only takes a single task to deploy your entire solution into the cluster. With this one task, we take the compose file that was generated for you, and we reuse it to up your entire project inside of Azure. Once this is done, it allows us to then utilize Azure for all of its power and wealth, allowing Microsoft to help you from the Visual Studio experience, the CI/CD experience, all the way into Azure. If I were to move over to Azure, I'll be able to see the entire cluster, the health of each one of my nodes, and all of the applications I currently have deployed inside that particular cluster. Why are we doing this? To implement DevOps. DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users. To deliver value, you must monitor your application while it's being used in production, and Azure helps at all levels. If I were to go back over to this dashboard here, you'll see that Azure has empowered me to not only monitor my application at the top tier, this is custom telemetry being sent out from the application. I can even monitor the telemetry of the containers that are running my images, and even go a step lower and actually monitor the infrastructure that is actually hosting my cluster. There is no better place to allow us with Microsoft to help you develop, to debug, and deploy all your container workloads, regardless if they're on Linux or on Windows. Thank you so much, everyone.
We can switch back to machine two. You know, the cool thing that Donovan showed there, just get across, is, you know, this is a full .NET framework app that uses IIS, that uses WCF, that, you know, uses everything inside Windows. And when he containerized that with Docker, it was running a Windows container, which meant that I can install all the stuff that I need, and I can just use that Docker file format to represent it for, you know, again, everything that I have today. And when then he deployed it using VSTS into Azure, you know, one of the other subtle things you might have noticed with that Service Fabric cluster was it was running on 5 servers and was hosting over 110 separate applications. And the beauty about that containerization model is it basically enables massive server density, where instead of having to have separate VMs for my different applications, because I just didn't want to have to worry about application A screwing up application B, I can now isolate it with containers, and I can dramatically drive down my infrastructure costs and save a whole bunch of money for the company as well. And the beauty is now that it's containerized, I can start to take advantage of a microservice-based approach. I can start to parse apart some of my bigger containers into smaller instances and distribute that functionality, and really, in a very seamless way, start to modernize my architecture at the pace I want to. And the technology that Donovan was showing was using Service Fabric, which supports both Windows and Linux containers. So you can actually have both .NET and Java sitting together in the same application with different container instances across them. You can use multiple programming languages. It supports both stateless as well as stateful microservices. And the beauty about it is it works on Azure. It works on Azure Stack, which we'll talk about in a bit. And it also will work on your existing environment. So if you have an existing VMware environment or bare metal server environment or even another cloud, you can use Service Fabric inside there to be able to run and deploy your applications as well. And Service Fabric is just one of multiple different options that we have for how you can use containers inside Azure. In addition to Service Fabric, we also support all of the popular orchestration frameworks out there, like Kubernetes, Mesos, Docker Swarm. And we even, with our Azure Web Apps and Batch services now, enable you to directly upload a container and run it. so that if you just want to run a single instance for a very specialized workload, you can now take advantage of containers for that as well. So the other kind of trend in addition to containers and microservices that we know that a lot of developers are thinking about is a trend called serverless-based computing. Anyone here doing serverless-based workflows today? People have heard of serverless and wondered what that was. Yeah. So it's a popular trend, and it's basically, you know, I think there's a couple reasons to think about serverless. You know, one is it helps to move your architecture towards a more event-driven based approach, which, you know, helps in terms of enabling you to build kind of more robust applications that can scale better. And it also is really great in that it potentially enables you to actually pay a lot less for infrastructure, because instead of having to have a VM sitting around with a loop waiting for something to happen, you can instead trigger code to execute only when a particular event happens, which ends up enabling you to save a lot of money when you run it on a cloud provider like Azure, which lets you pay only for those execution cycles. And you know, we now provide a bunch of really great support inside Azure. I know there's a bunch of breakout sessions here this week that enable you to execute serverless code. And what's nice is you can basically now set up triggers across literally hundreds of different resources. So it could be in response to a URL coming in, a timer executing. It could even be things like a CRM record change, not just Dynamics, but also Salesforce. A CRM record change, I want to run this code inside Azure. And we have built-in connectors now that make it easy to do so. We also then have great Visual Studio tooling, as well as an Azure service we call Azure Functions, which enable you to execute and run that code in response to those events. And what's cool is the support we just shipped last week now enables you to do all your development of serverless code directly inside Visual Studio, where you can take any standard .NET class project and you can add it into your serverless app. You can use all of the great tooling support and debugging support that you expect and do it all locally, and then right-click and publish and load it inside Azure, or run it through Visual Studio Team Services and set up a full CI/CD environment for doing so. The other cool service that we have inside Azure is something called Logic Apps, which enables you not just to run serverless code, but also to basically orchestrate workflows that can span across multiple different sequences of events, and again, can pull connectors from over 100 different data and app sources, and basically weave them together into an end-to-end workflow that can trigger serverlessly in response to something happening as well. What I thought I'd do is let's show another demo of what this looks like in action. So I'm going to go ahead and load a project here. It's a simple demo, and it uses Twitter data, which is always kind of scary to show in a live demo, but it makes it fun and exciting and a little nerve-wracking. And so what this does with our Logic App service is it basically gives you a way that you can orchestrate a workflow that fires in response to a particular event happening. And so what this workflow is doing is it's going to basically say when a tweet is posted that has the word Azure in it or hashtag Azure, go ahead and pull that in and trigger off this workflow. And we're going to basically check Twitter every 15 seconds for a particular tweet. And then basically what I'm going to do is I'm stitching together multiple steps that are going to execute serverlessly. And this first step here is going to call an API in Azure that we call sentiment detection. And it's an artificial intelligence API that basically you give it some text and we'll tell you whether or not we think the text is positive or negative and return back a score between 0 and 1 and what the sentiment looks like. And then I'm going to call another AI service that we have built into Azure. We call the key phrases service. And this is where you can pump tons and tons of data at us, and we'll basically look at the text and extract out what are the key phrases and how are they related from the documents that you supplied us. And so it kind of learns what are the key phrases. I can then call custom code if I want to, and call an Azure function to execute a little bit of code with C# or JavaScript or Java. And then I'm going to pump this into what's called a Power BI data set, which will store basically the tweet, where the sentiment score, where it was created, who created it, and what the body is. So I can see a real-time dashboard view of all these tweets. And then last but not least, I'm going to have a simple bit of logic that says if the tweet is negative, the sentiment is negative according to the AI system, post it into Azure to Microsoft Teams, which will give me a channel for all my developers and employees to be able to look at, and then open up a support case inside Dynamics 365 so that one of our support people can basically reach out to that Twitter user and contact them directly. And what's cool is, this is just, you know, I'm using all these built-in connectors and I can use a bunch more. And so we have inside Azure a whole bunch of built-in connectors that you can use. Ones that go against, say, an SAP system, including an on-premises one, an Oracle database, or let's say DocuSign, or Dropbox, or DB2, or Informatics, or a whole bunch more. And all these connectors, you know, Salesforce, et cetera, all these connectors are built in. And so you can effectively just add one, stitch it together, and very quickly kind of build out whatever workflow you want, augment it with your own APIs, your own custom code if you want to. And then once you do that, you hit save, it's now running in a serverless-based way. So there's no VM running. It'll just fire when an event happens and execute very quickly. So let's look at what's happening in the world of Twitter right now. This is where it gets exciting. And so this is that Power BI dashboard that we put into the workflow. You can see it just updated. So great, we'll see what someone just said. And you can see these little dots. These are where people are tweeting about Azure all over the world. You can see here the sentiment score. And the good news is, on average, people are pretty happy. So we're seeing kind of 0.88 is the sentiment tweet, which is pretty good. But you can see a few outliers, which are the ones we want to basically double-click into and set up some automated workflow in our company to follow up. And if you remember, on this workflow, we said if it's negative, post it into Teams and open up a support incident. So let's go ahead and look at Microsoft Teams. And this is basically like a Slack channel view. It's built into Office 365. And this is showing me all of the tweets that we think might be negative according to the AI system. It's, you know, Twitter only has 140 characters, so you can't always tell. And so the good news, this guy says, Azure goes database crazy with one new NoSQL and two new SQL services. Is Jeff in the audience, by the way? I did this once, and someone was actually starting to tweet about stuff, and it was showing up in real time, which was very amusing. But anyway, you can see it's not really negative, which is good. But because he used database crazy, the system wasn't 100% sure. But you can basically see, you know, there are a couple of real ones where people see an error, or they see an exception, or they can't figure out how to do something. The good news is now, you know, the Azure team, if they were listening to this channel, will see it in real time. And again, we're able to open up that support incident and have someone follow up if it's a real negative, all in this automated way. So it's easy to create one of these things. The other thing that's nice is it's easy to monitor and run this. So this is all running serverlessly, so there's no VMs, there's nothing to patch, and I can click on any of these individual executions, and Azure will actually show you the serverless execution, what actually happened, including the data. So you can see for this particular tweet, this was the content that came back. It was tweeted by Blaster151 from Chicago, Illinois. You can see we thought it was positive, so it didn't take phrases, but here's what they basically said. It wasn't a very interesting tweet, but you can basically see all the steps and what it did throughout the system and basically how long it took. So that was a second in total time. And so, you know, this basically only required about a second of execution time, which basically meant if there were no other tweets for the next, say, 60 seconds, I just saved 59, well, let's say there's no other tweets for 100 seconds, I'd basically save 99% of the cost. I can't do the math that easily in my head of what 1/60th is from a cost perspective. But this only required basically 1 second of execution, so it dramatically lowered my costs. We have some customers in Azure now that are using this type of system to process over 1 billion events per day. And you might think 1 billion events a day sounds pretty amazing. It must be a giant app. It is actually a pretty big app. 1 billion events a day cost them about $7.30 a day of cost. Which makes them very happy, makes my CFO less happy. But you know, it's sort of, again, one of the ways that cloud can really enable you to both do new things, but also save a whole bunch of money along the way. And Logic Apps, as well as the Azure Function Service, is available for you to start using today. Domino's Pizza, anytime you actually order a Domino's pizza, if you do it on the web or you do it on mobile, it's running through Azure. And it's actually, they're starting to take advantage of that serverless-based approach, and that way they can scale out their ordering e-commerce pipeline based on the actual usage that's coming in. And again, don't have to have a lot of resources sitting around idle when people actually aren't placing orders. It gives them a great architecture and leaves them to save a whole bunch of money. So we've talked about a lot of development capabilities here. Let's switch gears now and talk about one last thing, which is, what do you do if you come to an event like this, see, like, wow, I can use all this tech, I can build all these amazing apps, but I can't use public cloud yet. for, say, a variety of different reasons. What do I do? And this is one of the reasons why, in addition to kind of full Azure and public cloud Azure that we run inside our data centers, we're also coming out with something called Azure Stack. And Jeffrey Snover is going to go into a lot more depth on this in his keynote tomorrow morning. But I thought I'd just spend just 2 minutes here talking about what Azure Stack is and why you should care about it. So Azure Stack is an extension of Azure. It gives you the same management API, the same developer portal. You can use Visual Studio against it, just like you can with full Azure. But it's designed so that you can actually deploy it and run it anywhere. So you can run it in your own data center. You can run it in a service provider data center. And you can stand it up very, very quickly and run it completely isolated from the internet. And it's great for a whole bunch of different scenarios. And I thought I'd just walk through a couple of examples of them for what it enables you to do, and it enabling you to take advantage of Azure for anything. Anyone here ever gone on a Carnival cruise line? A few people have. They're a great Azure customer today. They use Azure for their data lake that runs inside the cloud, and so when a ship docks, they upload a whole bunch of telemetry off the ship, and they use it to do kind of fleet management across the more than 100 ships that they actually have running around the world. So they're big believers in cloud, and in public cloud in particular. What they wanted to do then was figure out how can we use cloud on the ship? And this is where they ran into a problem, which is if you're on a ship and you're in the middle of the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean and there's a storm, that's not a really good time to depend on the network working for critical systems because the network sometimes isn't available. That's not an Azure statement, that's just called the internet statement and satellites. And so, you know, the question is how do they modernize their onboard ship systems? And this is where Azure Stack came into play. And what they were able to do is basically deploy, they're looking to deploy Azure Stack on the ship itself. Because Azure Stack runs at a very small footprint, they could do it without it costing much. And they're basically going to be able to modernize their onboard ship systems, use that same cloud-based model. They can use Azure Functions, they can use Service Fabric for doing containers, they can use App Service for doing their web apps and mobile backends, everything you saw today. But the beauty is they can now run completely disconnected, and when the ship comes into port, again, they can connect to the full public cloud and be able to process it that way. You know, one of the things that Azure Stack really enables is the ability to meet literally every regulatory need. I showed you that map of the 40-plus regions of Azure around the world today and all the compliance certifications that we provide. We have more compliance certifications in more regions than any other cloud provider out there. But there's still sometimes cases where you need to have local residency of data in a country that doesn't yet have a public cloud data center. So for example, if you want to build a system and run it in Russia, or you want to run it in a number of different countries around the world, they have requirements that says you can't export data outside that country for any purpose. EY, or Ernst & Young, is one of the biggest professional services firms in the world. They're, again, a big user of Azure today, and they run a lot of their core professional services systems inside the Azure cloud. And they store some of the most sensitive data for any company out there inside Azure as part of it. But they wanted to be able to, again, service countries like Russia or elsewhere that had these data sovereignty reasons. And the beauty about Azure Stack was they were able to kind of build their app once and run it in our data centers for 90% of the world, and then basically stand up an Azure Stack instance where they had to meet that additional regulatory need. Well, here's a quick video of them talking about this experience.
There's an explosion in innovation, technology, the digitization of business. Markets can be exploded overnight in a positive way or a negative way. Our clients look to us to help them take advantage of the opportunity that is just blossoming all around the world. Trust is really central to our relationship with our customers. Our advisory, tax, assurance practices are all technology-driven. Developers are central to delivering that value.
Azure and Azure Stack allows us to have a single point of development.
We develop one solution, and we can run that in public Azure or Azure Stack. The fact that we're always targeting the same set of services, we can provide the same set of SLAs to our customers. We use the same PowerShell tools that we use today with public Azure in order to stand up all the environments. The combination of virtual machine scale sets and load balancers, we can even spin up Service Fabric cluster, seems pretty striking to me. That is something that puts developers in the driver's seat.
Azure Stack gives us the ability to put Azure in countries where Microsoft does not have a full Azure data center. We are building on the digital platform and satisfying data privacy and sovereignty regulations in 140 countries around the world.
The possibilities are endless in being able to move applications, revisions of applications, and in-country-specific applications for data sovereignty or custom use cases from one central location, one central code base.
Our vision is really to enable a better working world. Our charge is to make sure that the technology we build and deliver serves our clients and preserves the trust that they are putting in us to do the work.
And what's great about Azure Stack is this part of our overall hybrid cloud consistency story, which enables you to take, again, the existing systems that you already have, whether they're Active Directory-based, whether they're SQL-based, whether they're Windows-based, whether they're .NET-based, and Hyper-V-based, and be able to connect it to the cloud in a seamless way, and basically bridge that journey to the cloud, enabling you to have a very smooth transition from your existing technology and be able to get value every step of the way. So we talked about lots of stuff, showed off a lot of demos here. The thing that we're really focused on here at Microsoft on Azure is, you know, how can we give you the tools and the platforms that enable you to do and build amazing things and be able to take advantage of all the new innovations that are happening out there, be able to do it in a way that is trustworthy and secure and enables you to build great solutions. And hopefully, as you saw through some of the demos, enables you to really deliver some phenomenal results to your organizations. And hopefully have a lot of fun developing those apps with them. And so I look forward to seeing, hopefully, all the great stuff that you build. And really want to thank you for coming out to the event. And I know throughout the week, we're going to have a lot of great breakout sessions. And I hope you enjoy what you learn here. So thanks a bunch, and have a great conference.